The Not Most People podcast is for those who despise mediocrity, reject the status quo, and challenge conventional wisdom. Join host Bradley Roth and discover what separates the winners, outliers, and standouts from most people.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Not Most People podcast. This is your host Bradley, and this is the show for those allergic to mediocrity, groupthink, and following the status quo. And before we get into today's full-length guest episode, which I'm very excited about, I would just like to remind you guys, if you're listening for the first time, or if you are a repeat listener, the one thing that I ask is that if you get value out of this show, that you help me grow it. I don't run ads. Hopefully, I never will. And I can do that as long as you guys continue to help me grow the show. So whether that's throwing it up on Instagram or social media, texting it, emailing it to a friend, whatever that looks like for you, if you could just help me grow the show in some way, and maybe even leave a review if you're feeling generous or you got some extra value out of the episode, that would be greatly appreciated as well. And then beyond that, for everything else going on with Not Most People, there's a whole lot going on just beyond the podcast. You can find the details for that in the show notes. So that's it really for housekeeping. We're going to jump right into today's episode, which this is actually the first episode I've recorded in a while. So I'm really excited to kind of get back into the swing of things and couldn't have really a better guest for it. Sal Shakir is joining me today. Sal, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bradley. Thank you so much. And I feel honored, man. After a break, here I am.
Yeah, we're getting back into it with a bang. So it's funny, actually, some of you guys listening were probably at the live podcast event in September where I interviewed Carlos Reyes, and Sal is actually his business partner. So it's kind of funny. They're back to back, but months apart. So I'm excited. I know Carlos brought the heat, and so no pressure, Sal, but I'm sure you will too.
Thank you. I'll try to match it.
Of course. Yeah, so I'll give you guys a little bit of background on Sal. He has a really, really unique backstory. He was born into a devout Catholic family in Iraq. So right there, that's not most people just from that fact. But growing up, he faced many dangerous situations because of that, and then moved to America in 2005, fleeing from religious persecution. So his family came here looking for a better life. And growing up and kind of simultaneously learning English, he spent time in a wide variety of jobs, then got into car dealerships. You had your own car dealership, or maybe multiple, and then got into real estate after that. And now after being in real estate, partnering with Carlos, you guys have built multiple seven-figure businesses, have it as 12 businesses. Is that, has the number gone up?
We narrowed it down to 12 now. We went crazy before, and now we consolidated a few.
Wow. That's amazing. So if you can say you narrowed things down to 12 businesses, you're doing pretty well. So now he is a self-made millionaire, loving husband, proud father, and basically just kind of on a mission. I know you and Carlos together are doing lots of really big things, good things for the community. So I could go on and on. I know you got a whole like kind of list, your resume, very long, but I want to start with that backstory like I usually do. And you kind of have one of those more improbable stories. I've had a lot of amazing people on this show, but yours kind of stands out. I remember going to your guys' event back in, and was that March, April, something like that? All in event.
The Freedom one?
Yeah.
Back in May, yeah.
Yeah. And so I had, I kind of got invited through Carlos, but then I discovered like your story. And I remember watching your video and I was like, man, that's pretty wild. I'm going to have him on the podcast someday. So here we are. But I want to know, what it was like before you guys moved, like how old were you? And then what was that transition like?
Yeah. So, by the way, again, thank you so much for having me here. What an honor.
Of course.
So we actually left Iraq back in 05. I actually entered the United States in 06 because we stayed for a little time in Jordan. But I was 15 years old when I came to the United States. And man, it was... everything was new, you know, learning a whole new culture, the whole new world to me. But prior to that, we had to flee Iraq. You know, it was definitely a rough environment to live in, especially after, you know, the war. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after the war, what happened is that Iraq became kind of like a magnet of in radicals, right?
Yep.
And so being a Catholic living in Iraq was definitely challenging around that time because there's no law and order whatsoever. And Iraq became just, like I said, a magnet of radicals. So it grew from all over the Middle East. They all headed to Iraq. And that was challenging. And on top of that, my dad started working with the U.S. military as a contractor to maintain their generators. And that was, you know, we were like a double whammy, right? So to kill us, like to the radicals' mind, to kill us, it would be a ticket to heaven, right? Mm. So it was definitely every day would be a challenge. You know, they tried to kidnap me and my brother a couple of times, actually. They broke in the house twice. They shot my dad. He survived, thankfully. We were barricaded and they tried to break in. And I don't get into the details of the story, but, you know, it's pretty horrifying times.
I'm sure.
So we had to flee, obviously. And we did. We left Iraq. I lost some neighbors. They got killed, whether they got kidnapped for ransom, they got killed, or other, you know, religion reasons, and had some family members that died. Mm. So it was time to leave, and we did. Thankfully, we were one of the few that survived, I guess, and were able to leave.
And was you have one brother, or you have other siblings?
I have a brother. My dad, my mother, my brother, and I.
Gotcha.
We left. And we came to the United States. We went to Jordan for a few months until we can travel to the United States. And it was like between 05 and 06. And we landed here in 06, very early 06, in February. And it was definitely a learning curve. We thought that we're coming to the land of opportunity, right? We land here and we're like, what's going on? And for the first year, we wanted to go back to Jordan because, you know, we were just...
You're still starting from scratch, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a minority in my own country.
Right.
Right. Like I am. And I came to the United States and here I am again, a minority again. Right. So my whole life I've been a minority.
Mm.
And, you know, you think, or you play the victim card and you think that, you know, all the odds are stacked against you, which is now to look back at it. This is your X factor, right? So you know, just need to toughen up and then stop being a little, you know what, and just go through it.
Right.
So we came here and we wanted to go back to Jordan because that was the comfort zone. I don't want to go back to Iraq to get killed. Jordan was like, you know,
good, less of a culture shock.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And it's safer there. Mm. And obviously it wasn't going to happen. I don't know what we're thinking, but we're kids. And, you know, before you know it, life start setting in and we don't speak English, barely any, and culture completely different. No friends, no nothing. You're starting life, all, you know, brand new life.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're rough around the edges when you live amongst, you know, wars and, you know, as a kid, you know, I'm a little rough around the edge, I guess. And before you know it, life start, financial life, you know, the freedom was great, right? Here's freedom. Like I remember, you know, going to school, I'm like, there's females and males are in school, like girls and boys in the one school, they share the same. So I'm like, that's great. And they
kiss. And you don't have to be looking over your shoulder quite as much. Yeah.
Yeah, correct. So I was like, huge culture shock. Hmm. And, you know, freedom was amazing. And then you think when you, for everybody that comes from outside the United States, by the way, they think that money grows on trees. Like if I, when I lived in Iraq and I had like cousins or like distant family, they called my mom, like, oh, I think I'm like, oh, they're wealthy. Like everybody that lives in the United States, to outside the United States people, like they made it.
Yeah.
So
that's what you see. That's like,
you can't tell anybody otherwise.
Yeah, right. Hollywood and like all that stuff. Like that's what you see.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
They just think that like you're living, like you're in the best country in the world. Like you have money, like you're set for life. And then soon enough, you start to realize like financial freedom is really hard to attain here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very fast-paced world.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad was trying everything. My dad was an entrepreneur back home. So he had like a little shop that he worked and like he was a contract for this. So he was like, a hardworking man, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for himself. And he tried everything here. I remember he even went he went for a whole year to study to become an AC technician so he can open his company with this other gentleman that he promised him he would do it. And after studying for all year, paying for it, became number one in the school. The guy is like, no, until we get business, I'm not going to quit my job. And my dad's like, I don't know. I studied so we can open this company and do this together. I can't do it. Like, this is new to me. Mm-hmm. And obviously that dismantling. My dad tried everything. And then with that degree, he started working a graveyard shift. So he was, while we're sleeping, he was working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God bless him. He's a hardworking man. But I remember at a young age, I remember my dad was, and I still remember this, sitting in the backyard crying. I haven't seen my dad cry. I've seen him once before when my uncle died, and that was the second time. And I saw my dad lose 70-some pounds in under 2 months.
Wow.
And I remember that day. Like, I remember that day because he felt like he failed his family financially.
Right.
And, you know, my dad is like a very big, like, tough guy. I've never, like, again, like, that was a really, like, memorable moment in my life. And that was that moment that I decided, no matter what, I'm going to work. I'm going to do everything that I can. I'm going to work and make sure that I provide for my family.
How old were you at that time?
I think I was like 16.
So this was pretty soon after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because, by the way, I didn't have my work permit. So that's why I couldn't work. Mm. You know, we're trying to like walk the right path. And but I was like doing whatever I can to make money. But then I went ham. And I was like a helper to an AC technician guy. I was knocking on doors to on golf courses so I can paint their fences. Say, hey, your fence is probably rusting from the, and mind you, very little English. And they pay me half of it, and I go buy material to sand it and prime it, and then paint it after. And they pay me when I'm done. And I was doing plumbing. And then when I got my work permit, I worked as a laundromat customer service or whatever, you know, in the laundromat, like dry cleaners. Mm-hmm. And I was doing all that while going to school. And then I'm like, I need to maximize more. So I need to go to 0 hour school. I go to school earlier than everybody so I can leave earlier so I can work in the laundromat. And when I leave the laundromat, if I have time, I can do other things. And if it was part time. And then the days I don't have work with the laundromat, I was doing all these odd jobs. I would go with the AC technician. I would say, hey, I'm available today. Do you need some help? And I would go, if not. And I did all these things all at once. And when I had some free time, I decided to go to the car auction and buy me a $500 car, $400 car, so I can fix it up a little bit, clean it up, and run it back to the auction so I can make maybe $100 or $200.
Yeah, you were hustling.
So it was like everything that I can do to make money. Mm-hmm. And then I graduated high school and I had an opportunity to actually work with the U.S. military. Hmm. And I was still working at the laundromat. But I went to San Diego for a 4th of July party to my cousin's house. And then he had a friend that had a 4th of July party. And then I met somebody there that we're talking. And then she called him and she's like, I think your cousin might be a good fit for this thing. And it was like training the U.S. military to survive when they get deployed to somewhere like the Middle East. Mm. It's called rotation.
Yeah.
And I did that for about 3.5 years. But when I got that call, I said, yes, I'll take that job. Mind you, I have to go back Monday or something to the laundromat. I called my boss. I said, look, I'm not coming. However, I do have this girl and her sister that want to get a job. So here is my replacement. And I gave them the number. They ended up getting the job there to replace me. And one more, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't feel bad about it, but that's what I did. And I was doing that for 2 to 3 weeks out of the month to go help train the U.S. military. It's like simulation training. And I did that for about 3.5 years. And when I go back to Arizona, I would do the cars and I would do the AC technician and the same thing. Whatever time I had, I did that. And before you know it, I started my retail lot back in 2013, my car dealership retail, and not wholesale anymore. I was wholesaling to other dealers.
Gotcha.
And now I started selling cars to the public retail. That was like the biggest milestone in the car industry for me. And that's where I met Carlos. Carlos was actually working at a third party motor vehicle. Well, it's actually a title loan place that has a third party motor vehicle. So when somebody goes and get a title loan, they have to get their, you know, take the title, possession of the title and whatnot. And that's where I met Carlos. Carlos was marketing to the dealerships around the area, including mine, to do the paperwork. And we just became good friends. And we partied for like a whole year. But during that transition of like becoming friends and everything, I opened up a second car dealership.
And was this just from like you saved up money from all this work you were doing?
And, yeah. You know, it's really not just hustling, to be honest. And, you know, like just, you know, how and using lines of credit and, you know, doing whatever you can to get the business going. And I was always like good with money. I manage money the right way and I know what to do. I actually bought the property at 18 years old, 19 years old, that was burnt back in 2009 or 10. It was burnt. And I bought it for 15 grand. That's all the money I had, by the way. I was still doing the cars because I was flipping cars like very, very like lightly, but that was all the money I had saved and like throughout the whole years. And I didn't know how to make it work. So I was remodeling the apartment with myself, my dad, and a guy, the helper that was doing it. And then I ended up renting it. I didn't know what to do with it. Just ended up renting it and not thinking about it. And, so with that whole thing, you know, two car dealerships and, then the real estate start happening. Well, before the real estate, I said, Carlos, what are you doing? And Carlos was back then doing hats. He flipping hats and, you know, everybody had a clothing store online. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing on a Tuesday? And he's like, I'm working. I'm like, well, take it off. He's like, why? I'm like, we're coming with me to the auction. So I go to the car auction and I'm like, we're buying this car. And I'm bidding on it. And then I buy it for $2,500. And I'm like, Carlos, here you go. Take pictures of it, list it online and sell it. He's like, all right. So he sells it for $5,000, same week. Makes double his money. He doesn't even know this, but I actually paid the taxes for it just so I can motivate him. Like, hey, man, like you can make money. So that's how I found out like Carlos was a hustler. I'm like, let's start a business together. I have a condo I'm about to sell. And I can make money. I sold for $86,000. So I got, after commissions, whatever, I got like some money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's do a business together. And he had just sold, he's selling his house that he had a little bit of equity left in it. And we're like, let's figure out a business. And one business to another, we even car washes, coffee shops, even strip clubs. We're thinking of anything but real estate. The real estate only made us the money to actually able to start a business, right?
Right.
And by then I'm like, I have a friend, we figured real estate and then we're trying to find a real estate. I'm like, well, I have a friend realtor that knows my dad. So I will go to him and he's a broker now. He sends me to this newbie realtor that spoke barely in English. He found this deal from a wholesaler that I bought. So I paid him commission. I paid the wholesaler commission and we ended up fixing it and flipping it. We broke the granite. Carlos and I were like moving the granite. We broke it. We did everything wrong. We barely made anywhere. We made like $12,000 or $14,000. Thank God we made money in that property.
Right.
And that was the first property that we did. And then we start finding out about wholesaling, which is, you know, does your audience know what wholesaling is?
Maybe I do, but maybe explain it in a couple sentences.
Wholesaling is when you find a home seller and you put it under contract. And before you close on the property, let's say you have 2 weeks to close on the property or a month, you find another buyer and you assign the contract to that new buyer and you just make an assignment fee of X amount. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much flipping paper. And that's what we did with the first one. They flipped paper to us and we paid them.
Yep.
And we decided to go into wholesaling. And we were pretty aggressive. I mean, we did okay when we first started, and then we did better and better, and we implemented technology. And that's when I decided to sell one of the car dealerships to a friend of mine, to my dentist, which is a friend of mine, which is for what I bought the second car dealership at. It was not much. And then I decided, and I'm like, I can't run two businesses at once at this point. I need to focus on real estate. So I went ahead and relinquished my rights. I gave the dealership to my family because it was myself, my brother, and my dad. And I relinquished all the rights to it, all the fun. I had over $500,000 by then in equity. And that was like back in 2014 or 2015 when I relinquished everything. And the cars and I paid off my parents' mortgage. Real estate was doing pretty well. And paid off all their credit cards. And I said, look, I'm not going to help with this one, but here's the money in it and the business is yours. Here is the mortgage is paid off. The credit card is paid off. now you got this. So to clear my conscience, I did that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And the rest is history. Now we have multiple businesses, including a medical commodity business and marketing businesses and an education company and some softwares and obviously the real estate company.
Wow. Man, first off, I love all those like stories, those behind the scenes stories that you never really hear. And I had so many questions as you were going, but I was like, he's on a roll. Like, I just want to hear the next thing and then I'll come back. But yeah, so I have a bunch of questions off of that. First off, I love the whole story. I feel like it could be like a book or a documentary someday. I don't know if you've thought of that, but
I never thought about it, but thank you.
There you go. We'll see. But anyways, I was curious just from the beginning, like, I know there's not a lot of Catholics in Iraq, but like, what is like the percentage or the some sort of...
We're actually a fraction of a percent, not even 1%. Yeah.
Huh. So did you come from somewhere else? Or is it just
I was in Baghdad, so I was in the capital, but there's not many of us.
Yeah.
And the people that were, a lot of us, like a lot of Catholics or Chaldeans, they fled Iraq back in the day, like years and years, like 40, 50, 60 years ago. Hmm. So whatever is left is us, and it wasn't many.
Yeah.
And right now there's even less because they were persecuted. You know, again, you're a stranger in your own home.
Yeah.
That's how it feels like. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine what it's like today.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So then fast forwarding from there a little bit. So again, that gives an idea of kind of how uncommon that was there. But once you came here and you started all these different jobs and hustling, and you said that kind of turning point moment, which most of the people who I have on the show tend to have kind of that like turning point moment, right? Was when you saw your dad crying and you're like, never again. I want to change this for me and my family and that kind of thing. And so you kind of answered this, but I was wondering, like, was it more of a moving away motivation? Like, I don't want to be poor, or was it more of like a, man, I want to like have a lot and give to people and that kind of thing, or like, you know, moving towards, if that makes sense, or was it kind of in the middle of both and did that shift over time?
Honestly, it started, I just want to take care of my family, make sure my family, I don't want to go back to Iraq. I want to make sure that to provide for my family. And obviously, you know, purpose does change and evolve. And then that's helping people obviously became after, you know, we always, as human beings, we have micro goals and we have macro goals, whether we realize it or we don't. But your micro goals is like, what are you going to do next? Like today, tomorrow, next week. Your macro goals usually are longer terms. And no matter what, we have those. It's just sometimes we don't know how to put them in the right order. Mm-hmm. And when you start to master that, believe it or not, your macro goal that sometimes takes you 2 or 3 years or 4 years becomes your micro goal. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example with financials. You can say, if I make $100,000 a month, or that means $1 million plus a year, that could be, that's your goal that you work toward for 5 years. But then when you achieve that, you know, that could become your micro goal, and then the macro goal can get bigger, right? Yeah. And that can happen at every aspect of life. And I'll tell you what, one of the best things that happened to me in life is that, I'm sorry, there's noise here.
Oh, no worries.
One of the best things that happened to me, and I think that people I'm going to tell you, I'm talking about myself. I embrace how stupid I was. I embrace how naive. Because if I knew, by the way, I was losing in the car business. I wasn't making, like, I was hustling and making whatever. And I lost in like 80% of the cars I bought and sold. But I kept doing it. Yeah. I didn't tell you all the stories. And like, but because I was so ignorant. I was so ignorant that I told myself that if somebody else can do it, then I can do it better. I didn't say I could do it. I said I could do it better. And that was always like my ego, like that drove me as an ignorant entrepreneur hustler. And had I known today, if I know what I knew today, back then, I wouldn't have pushed myself to the car industry. I would have tried it for a couple of months, said, you know what? This is not, I can't keep losing. I mean, after month 2, 3, 4, 5, like losing is losing, man. It doesn't feel good.
Right.
But because I saw somebody else did it and I said I could do it better, that kept me from quitting. Do you see where I'm going with this? Like sometimes ignorance is a bliss. And this is one of those moments.
Sometimes Yeah, it's funny. It's like intelligence is a gift, but it can also be a curse at times, right? Like some people, they're so smart and they know that they're smart. Usually that comes from like people who are really smart in school, right? Because they have evidence. Oh, you got good grades and that kind of thing. And so they think that like, you know, I'm just going to figure it out, or I'm gifted enough that it's just going to come to me, you know, whereas the other end of the spectrum where you're like, well, you just don't even know what you don't know. And so you just kind of dive in, and I find like those are the people that, I don't know. I think for a successful business, like big time, you kind of either have that one partner who's like the contemplator, like analytical one, and the other one who's just like, let's go, like visionary, right? And it's the same thing. You can have that kind of like person who just moves so fast and they break things and kind of like figure it out afterwards, and they might make more mistakes, or you have the person who kind of like overanalyzes and doesn't really take the action, right?
Limiting, there's limiting beliefs. There's so many different factors. There's limiting beliefs. I mean, we all have this financial thermostat, whether we believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have this one person that lives paycheck to paycheck, no matter what. And then somehow you got your taxes, you got an extra couple of grand in your bank account, but somehow at the end of the month, you're still back to the same. What does that tell you? People have a financial thermostat. If somehow they spend it, they find ways to spend it. And you may think it's external, but it's actually internal. They're like, oh, this came up. No. This doesn't have, there's a pattern here.
Yeah.
So it all starts with you, obviously. And if you want to make it, you're going to make it. And no one is going to care about it. By the way, no one cares how bad you have it.
Right.
No one does. You can moan about it. You can cry about it. But no one's going to change that for you but you.
Yeah.
And I guess for me, that my X factor is that no matter what, I'm going to make it work. I don't want to go back to Iraq. I don't want to be shot. I didn't even tell you the whole story. When somebody literally shot at me when they broke in the house coming down from upstairs, and they ran out of bullets. I'm not supposed to be here, but I'm here. This is what's called an X factor.
Mm-hmm.
You can cry about it and play victim and feel like you have a chip on your shoulder. Like, yeah, I survived this, so therefore the world owes me something. Yeah. I have this kind of disease. The world owes me something, or I'm poor. No one owes you nothing. You only owe yourself to do something about it.
Yep.
And honestly, this is a defining moment of your life. You can make your X factor make you succeed, or your X factor take you down. 100%. My X factor is I don't want to go back to Iraq. I've seen enough harsh and in life. Where I think it made it easier. Actually, I had it easier. Let me take that back. Because living in harsh environment, coming here made this environment look easy. Therefore, I could thrive in it.
Wow. Yeah. So then let's say someone's listening and they're like, man, X factor. Like, what's my X factor? Is there a way to find it?
Well, I think everybody has problems.
Right.
It depends on the size of the problem. I don't like saying problems. Challenges. Everybody has challenges. It depends what the size of the challenge is. And I'm going to give you a very, very tangible analogy, I guess. Justin Bieber.
Yep.
We all know Justin Bieber, right?
Yep.
I hope so. Well, a couple of years back, he was going through some challenges. And all of a sudden, he became religious. And I don't know what happened next, but I'm talking about like a few years back, 5 years ago, 4 years, something like that.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, somebody who has so much money, fame, and the world at their fingertip, do they have challenges? They do.
Sure.
So his challenges came about, and he was probably fighting depression and whatnot. And you see it with Hollywood all the time. And then they turn to like finding purpose, and they become religious, or they go to Africa, they help the kids in need. They find purpose. But to try to paint the picture, there is challenges if you have money or you don't have money. And it's just how big the problem is. When you have money, the problems become smaller,
right?
I guess. But if you had your life, if you had a perfect life today, no problems for an entire year, you have no problems. Everything, every day you wake up is a blessing. That's a sign of a problem.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what that is. You have a flat tire, you might want to go commit suicide.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be the world's biggest problem to you. Mm-hmm. Life is not supposed to be all gravy. We're supposed to have ups and downs, but you want to stay in that line. You mentally, you want to be in that line. Whether life is up or down, you stay right in here.
Yeah.
And that's where you want to live at. You don't want to be happy oh, things are bad, I'm not happy. That's not sustainable. So if you're asking me, do people have their X factor? You're absolutely right. Everybody has an X factor.
It's just identifying.
You've got to find it.
Yeah.
What's your X factor? Is it financially? Is it socially? Like, some people are socially awkward. I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. I'm not out there.
Yeah.
That's me. And that might be a challenge in my life, but I embrace it. Yeah. I use it to fuel me, right? That's an X factor. So when somebody's socially, if you're an introvert, what is usually the biggest strength? We become systemizers. I'm an operation systemizing kind of guy that helped our organizations grow faster than others.
Yeah. Right? You can think in ways that others can't.
Yeah. Correct. And so that's my X factor. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a sob story about behind your X factor.
Right.
You can just use it to fuel you.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I think that's another one of those recurring themes I've had with guests on the show, is that there's kind of like this mainstream push to like comfort, right? Consumerism, everything's about becoming more comfortable, more relaxed, no challenges, right? Kind of like, you know, we're having this whole kind of like snowflake safe space kind of thing going on in society, which I won't get more into that, but.
And you're right, by the way, it's absolutely true what's happening.
Yeah. You're like, if your life doesn't have challenge in it, like you will manufacture challenge because you're not meant to like go on or live without it, right? Like the people you think of, like a trust fund kid, right? You're like, oh, they got everything like perfect. They have whatever they want. Why are so many of them addicted to drugs, right? Like there's that challenge is missing. And then, or basically what happens is there's no tolerance to challenge. And then so once one comes along, it completely knocks you on your back. Right, and you can't get up.
You do need to challenge yourself, absolutely. If you don't, it just become you will find a problem. If you don't challenge yourself often, you will find a problem that's going to take you down.
Yeah.
By the way, entrepreneurs, what are entrepreneurs?
The problem solvers.
Professional problem solvers.
Yeah.
So if we don't have a problem to solve, we're going to create a problem. So we got to stay busy solving other people's problems and make money out of it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's also interesting too when you talk about kind of like that challenge and everyone having their own challenge and trying to avoid it and stuff. Because, and I think, I don't know when I heard this, but I think I heard it in church. I was raised Catholic too, and there's a story where this one guy like was complaining, I think to God. He was like, "Man, I really don't like, you know, like in Catholicism, we have this idea of like the cross. Everyone has their own cross to bear, right? Their own challenges. It's a metaphor." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Man, I really don't like this cross. You know, I want to be like where he or she or, you know, pointing to other people where they are." And so God goes, "Okay, like here's a room full of all these different crosses. Go and like pick and, you know, choose yours." And he goes through, he picks him up. He's like, this one doesn't feel right. This one's too big, too small, whatever. And so after a while, kind of looking through all of them, he comes back and he picks one up and carries it. He's like, I think this one's right. And God's like, well, that's the one that you had originally. Like, you know, so that's like the one you're meant to. And it's funny that kind of brought up that story. I hadn't even thought about that probably in years, but.
That's an amazing story, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just.
I hope that resonated with a lot of your audience.
I hope so too. Yeah. And it's so on point, right? Because again, you have those challenges, and I feel like a lack of challenges can almost be a hindrance as an entrepreneur, right? Like there's that turning point that you talked about, right? And a lot of people who I've talked about, it's that like life or death scenario or that rock bottom, right? That kind of, or one of my favorite authors, MJ DeMarco, calls it the FTE, the fuck this event, where everything, you're like, enough of this, like, and things turn around.
Yeah.
But I found that the people who lack that, it's hard to like, because you're kind of in this middle ground, right? You're not like super, you're not uncomfortable enough to really like move forward and that sort of thing. And so it's kind of, again, if you haven't had enough pain or challenge, and like Tony Robbins, you're either moving towards pleasure or away from pain, right? And pain tends to be a stronger motivator. It can be really difficult to kind of like, you almost have to manufacture it in a sense, or I don't know. Some people I think are wired where they maybe don't need that, but I've found at times like a lot of people are like, "Man, if I didn't have that moment, like I probably would still just be kind of, I wouldn't have changed my life. I'd be middle of the road." And so that's something I've always kind of struggled with, is like, how do you How do you find that like X factor? How do you dig deep when it's not so obvious sometimes?
I think when you practice it more and more, like you see a pattern, you'll understand how to maneuver or use it to your advantage. The humans, by the way, are like crocodiles. We don't move until the pain is big enough. Change is scary to us. Yeah. And I'm afraid of change, but I constantly have to force myself to change. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, to us, it's like change. No, this is bad. Like, let's work toward the comfort, the routine. But then that's what's going to create more problems. So I'd rather go this way to the discomfort because that's going to make less problems and make more thriving lifestyle. And it's a constant battle that you have to find. And today where everybody's scared, the economy is not doing as well as it should.
Right.
And, you know, inflation is happening and all this. You can't change any of that. What's happening to the United States. What you can do is what's happening to you.
Right.
So knowledge, you can have two things you can do. Knowledge, educate yourself. What can you do in times like this? Number two, and this one is like more detail. There's more than one answer to that. Positioning. You position yourself to win, whether the market is up or the market is down. It doesn't matter. If you have those two factors in like 100%, you're fine. Nothing is gonna take you down. A smart entrepreneur needs to know when to position themselves. Carlos and myself, we sold our cars. Like, I used to have two Lamborghinis. I sold one of them like last year, and the second one I sold it earlier this year, or toward early.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, "What are you doing? Like, you're making." I'm like, "Yeah, I drive it once a month. Like, I don't get the pleasure out of it. That's just besides the point. But I'm positioning myself.
Yeah.
I want to invest money into opportunities when they come." Well, they're like, "Why don't you do it?" I'm like, "No, there's more opportunities coming." And guess what? Opportunities are left and right now because the market is missing money. Money is scarce right now. Yeah. And when money's scarce, you get a lot of opportunities. When money was abundant, a few months ago, there was a lot of money in the market before interest rates were 7% and whatnot. Well, if I wanted to find an opportunity, I had to find 100 opportunities. Maybe one of them would be a fit because everybody's like, they're so slim. Well, now that everything flipped, now I get 10 opportunities. Maybe I'll take one because I feel like taking the best one.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
a matter of positioning. And I don't know how we got into this, but I want to explain that things are okay if you just make sure that you're right here and your outside is right. You make sure you're positioning yourself to win.
Right. Yeah, I think that's something, that second point where you said about the positioning, whether things are going up or down, some people might be saying right now, like, okay, how do I position myself? You know, maybe I don't have a Lamborghini to sell to then be ready to buy real estate, right? Or something, you know. So I think if you can see things coming and if you have assets that you can kind of move things around or whatever, it's a little more obvious. What about someone who's like, man, I'm like still trying to kind of like get over the hump or get past survival at this point and things are getting scary? Is there anything specific? Yeah.
Two things there's a few scenarios that you can. First of all, this time, that's what weeds out the most businesses. A lot of business is not going to make it. It's going to challenge them.
For sure.
Second approach you should have is either you're gonna work to sustain just to wait for the storm to blow, or thrive. More millionaires are made in an economy crisis than anything else.
For sure.
So you can use that to your advantage if you're positioned right. But what is positioning? Well, number one, write this down. Get a list. Get a list. And write things down in your life. What is my absolute needs in business to make it run? And then what are my absolute needs in life to survive? And then write, and you're going to start to see all these expenses that you have. This is financial positioning. Mental positioning obviously is different, other positioning. But let's talk about financial positioning.
Yeah.
I have an app that I downloaded. I make sure everybody in the company has that app because I want to make sure my people want here too. It was tough to get Carlos on it, but he's on it.
It's called what Simplify. App is it? Simplify.
It's called Simplify. S with all I's. Simplify money. And it literally breaks down what you spend. Like, it literally breaks down like home expenses, automotive, shopping, eating, whatever that is, utilities. And then it tells you where you're lacking. I start doing this a year ago because I'm like, I need to position myself. I knew something was coming. We both knew something was coming.
Yeah.
And that way we start to cut down the extra that we don't need. And then when I cut down the extra, now I know what I have an excess of that I can use for. So financial positioning was literally that for me.
Gotcha.
Education, we were networking left and right. I mean, I was traveling. We were traveling like 4 or 5 times a month, networking, meeting new people, looking for new ventures. Then educating. I'm always trying to find, I'm always trying to learn about some things. And I would watch random YouTube videos. Like people are like, what are you watching that for? I'm like, I like to learn. And you put those together, nothing is getting, obviously there's extra stuff that can come your way and maybe knock you down a little bit, but you can get up a lot faster when you prepare it.
Yeah. There's a lot more that you can control than the average person gives themselves credit for. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the economy can be not doing well, but guess what? The same people, like the top guys will always come through the other side.
Absolutely.
And it's not just that they all got lucky, right? There's that, like, there's all those other little factors that contribute to that.
It's all in here.
Yeah.
It's all in here.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, you know, generally speaking, everyone's a little bit scared right now, or like the majority of people. And, you know, the average person might lose some equity or, you know, money in the stock market, whatever, over the next year or two. Who knows kind of how long these things are going to last. But I don't know. Maybe I'm a little like weird in the head, but I think me and lots of other entrepreneurs are like, all right, this is the time is coming. Like, for here's the opportunity, right? Like, zig while they zag, while everyone's scared. That's when you double down. That's when you go extra hard, right?
And this is the time. I see more opportunity than ever. By the way, I wish I knew what I knew today back in 2008.
Yeah,
I was still a voter. I was brand new, right? So, but I wish I knew what I knew today back then.
Right.
How many people say that?
Everyone.
Well, back then is now.
Yeah. Yep.
Prepare yourself. Educate yourself.
There's a reason you didn't know it back then.
There is.
You had to go through certain things to be now. So now is your time, right?
Kind of those
things happen as they should, kind of, you know, cliches or whatever, but there's a lot of truth to it. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, maybe I wouldn't, if I didn't do what I did, and I wouldn't run into Carlos, and I wouldn't start these, and everything, you know, everything unfolds the way it should be.
Yeah. So, one thing I want to ask you about, because this is another very relevant kind of business conversation, is finding a partner, business partner, right? Like you and Carlos, sounds like, I'm guessing you guys both connected because you're both hard workers, or you're both immigrants, or you had some commonalities there. And
I can give
just
you the list what we have. We have actually partnership principles.
Okay. Yeah. Let's hear them.
We have four partnership principles.
Four?
No, four. Yeah. One of them is work ethics. You can't teach that.
Yep.
So we both are relentless workers. We used to work until 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Like nothing stopped us. The second one is respect. Actually, the second one is trust. I trust him with financially. I trust him as a person. He trusts me back and forth. The third one is accountability. If we lack in an area, we hold each other accountable. And the last one is, we used to be company comes first. Now the bigger picture. We literally switched our partnership principles a year ago because we used to say company come first. And we're like, well, there's a lot of companies. So now the bigger picture.
I like that. So are those four things, did you kind of pull those from somewhere, or you guys came up with those?
We literally sat down in a room and we came up with those, 7 years ago?
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you come up with them during a time when like you really needed them, or there was maybe a little tension? Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we had challenges, but I know that we needed them because we were growing rapidly.
Yeah.
So we needed something to keep us in line.
Yeah, I think that's super important. We both know Ed Milet, right? He's a big mentor right now. And in the Arte Syndicate, I was watching his call last week, and it was all about structure, right? And you're like, man, this guy's worth almost $1 billion. He's here to talk about business. And he comes on, he's like, I'm going to tell you about structure today. And that, you know, the average person would be like, why? Like, why is that relevant? Or how does that make me money? But those structures are like so important. Just that simple four principles, right? Or core values in a business. Like, they keep you Because like when things are growing and scaling and expanding, it can get chaotic real fast, right? And you lose track of things, things fall through the cracks. And so having these different structures in place, right? Your morning routine is a simple example of one, right? Or even your gym routine, whatever it might be, is there to basically guide you. And so it's like, you don't want to go nuts. Like certain people don't do well with too much structure. Like me personally, I'm naturally a very structured person. Yeah. So I've had to like put at least some minimal structure in place, but man, it's like compared to when I was younger, I'm like, man, I don't know how I even got through the day. I had like zero anything, you know, but then there's other people where sometimes you can be too structured, where you're rigid. You know what I mean? So do you find that, because I know Carlos is kind of like, he's like a, you know, he's kind of like the public figure side. You are too a bit, but I know that you're like,
I'm the
mastermind on the back end, right?
I'm the operation systems guy. And this is honestly, this is my, one of like my strong areas. And we literally have, if I show you our organization and like share my Google Drive and whatnot, you'll see like, I have departments, and inside departments, I have different, I guess, arms in there, and everything has a place. There's flow charts, there's SOPs. Mm-hmm. We literally have anything from somebody when gets hired, even how to create a key fob to enter our building, and to even ordering paper, right? So we have a, and that was the only way in order for us to achieve eight figures, that was the only ways to do that. Mm-hmm. If people tell you that they make that much money without really structure, then they got lucky and it's not going to last.
Right.
We built to sustain, and we built to last and to grow. And there's a few steps. There's the hustler, there is the solopreneur, and there's the business owner. Mm. You can only do so much being a hustler. And we have a lot of hustlers calling themselves businessmen.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. At scale. You can't scale. You might be the king of your own hustler world that you're in, but no, there's next levels. Mm-hmm. And the next level, and next level, and next level.
So where would you say someone's like, all right, like I need to, most entrepreneurs or people who call themselves entrepreneurs know that, all right, I've kind of had it on my back of my to-do list for a while to start creating some procedures and systems and that kind of thing. Where would you start if you're like, man, I don't even know where to start. I'm overwhelmed. Any resources or just kind of principles?
So I use technology in my advantage all the time, but start with a piece of paper, write down. What I do is I like to write down the daily activity, the weekly activity, the monthly activity, whatever that I do. And then I find patterns, and whatever that I see a pattern overlapping, then I make a process for that.
Hmm. And so something that's repeated, basically.
Yeah, something exactly. Yeah. So you start with the most repeated thing, the tedious stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're not doing things off the cuff. Because if you hire an employee today, and you have to, if I train an employee every time they get hired and sit next to me for a week or two, I have no time in the day to work.
Right.
So what you ultimately want to do is take whatever is in here and put it in a visual process where someone else can do it. Because if you keep everything here in your head, mm-hmm. you're going to become your own bottleneck, your biggest bottleneck.
Right.
And if you don't want to even spend the time to put it in here, you're going to spend 100 more times training everybody next to you. Because guess what? If they quit, you have to do it again. Or you have to hire more people. Mm-hmm. And just based on that ideology, I do everything else. I do everything else in the business, because if I die tomorrow, how is the business going to advance?
Exactly. It won't.
It won't. Yeah. If you don't do it that way.
Yeah. So I guess two questions with that. So is it, obviously I know you have a lot of stuff written out. Do you ever use video or screen records or audio?
How about also? This? I'm going to share my screen for a second so you know what I have.
Okay.
Just so you have an idea. Like if I go to finance, I have my payroll, my financials, my billing. I have taxes for every year. Here, I'm going to show you for administration. Let's go to the most important. We have an HR department. We have a legal department. For a legal department, literally, we have open cases, updated cases. We have flow charts for that. I'm going to go to the HR. Here, let's go to the most basic one. Here it is. There is videos. I just told you about a key fob, right?
Yep.
There you go. How to make a key fob, right? It's a, and you have flow charts. Onboarding, when you're onboarding, when you're firing somebody, when you're doing disciplinary action, time off approvals. And we have this everywhere in our, literally everywhere.
Wow. All
right. So that's what's going to help you scale, because you're going to become a master delegator.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that you're going to run a big operation just by yourself, you're wrong. You need a team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you accomplish that, if you understand that, comprehend it, then now it's time for you to build things like this. When you build, yeah. And it doesn't have to be perfect, by the way. It starts with the simplest. I just told you to write it on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And start there.
Yeah. So first off, that I think that was the first time I've ever had a screen shared during a podcast. So that was the first. That was kind of cool. So little bonus if you guys are watching on YouTube. But do you... like all of those, like there's tons of checklists and flowcharts and stuff that you just showed me. Did you write all of those, or do you kind of like hand that off to your employees to write as they go through them? And then also, how often are you revising everything?
Yeah. So very good question. So it starts with you, by the way, as an owner, you have a vision, mm-hmm. and obviously always ask for experts, but because I'm an organized guy. So I built the hierarchy of it. I built the structure, like what are the departments going to look like? What's inside mm-hmm. of that? How many they're going to, so I built kind of like the skeleton of it, and the things I'm an expert in, I make videos of it and SOPs, and the things that my team members are experts in, they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we meet together and revise it together. And how often we do it, every quarter, they're supposed to update it, like to revisit it. But as they do things on the weekly, like let's say today we updated something, like we have a new policy and we were using a payroll company that was different before, and now we have a new one. They're supposed to go in there and immediately update that.
Hmm.
But quarterly, they revise it entirely to see if everything is working with each other, because obviously you have different right. departments.
Quarterly at a minimum, basically.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, what we just did, we had five different payroll companies. And we just consolidated them like a few months back to one payroll company. Every company pays to that one company, and then it pushes it out. Do you mm-hmm. think our process was different before than now? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was, but they still get paid, but it was completely different. So we had to right. restructure that structure where it's easier for the finance department to allocate money the right way, to move money to the tax account. Like we even have processes where every month we move money to the tax account. No matter what, we
mm-hmm.
we don't get paid just based on the money we make. We actually set taxes aside because I don't want to be surprised the next year.
Right.
So there's small processes just like that everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of those things too, where you kind of have to be a little bit self-aware. Like did Carlos write many of those?
No.
No. Yeah. So like for me, I'm kind of like the visionary type person, right? And right now I only have, you know, I'm getting to that point where I need to start really getting things dialed in. I have a couple people kind of helping part-time, but I know at some point, like I'm like, once I start scaling, I'm going to need that organized thinker behind the scenes, like on the team or partner or whatever. Cause I know at a high level, like that's just never going to really be me. So I think it's important to kind of understand that and then act accordingly. Which absolutely. I think goes with everything. I think self-awareness is probably the number one factor that people miss that takes them down when it comes to entrepreneurship.
Great.
So, but man, yeah, that's super valuable advice. I know we're coming up here on time in a little bit, but is there anything else kind of related to that or just in general that you would want to share with the audience?
Life advice or just business advice?
Anything off the top of your head? I know we talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I would say that stop feeling sorry for yourself and do something about it, mm-hmm. because you know how they say you are the they. Mm-hmm. You're the one that is gonna take your family to the next level. Don't depend on anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
If no one is a millionaire in your family, no one has achieved something, be the first person to do that. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. We live in that world where everybody blames everything for where they're at today. No one cares.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, you know, you complain to your parents, they might care, but at the end of the day, it's not changing anything. So
no one cares enough to change things. There you
right.
go.
Or do it for you. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting. I think that was, it's a really powerful concept though. And something that just, again, this past week at an event, Ed Mylett again, he keeps coming up, but he talked about like being the one, right? Yeah. Like the one in your family, the one who kind of like breaks through wherever the past generations have been and changes the future of the family, like for future generations.
Absolutely. Right?
And I think you were the one for your family. Carlos was the one for his.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that like you can really kind of turn to if you're ever feeling like, man, I don't know, is this really what I want to be doing? Do I feel like doing it today? And it's like, man, when you think about like being the one, or like, that's like a, I don't know. It's kind of like it's a deep, powerful, almost like a wholesome kind of motivator.
Absolutely.
You know, like when you talked about like paying off your parents' mortgage, I'm like, man, there's not a lot that's probably a better feeling than that.
Oh man, it was one of the most amazing feelings.
Yeah.
There's another thing, by the way, that I want to give an advice. There's something mm-hmm. that I live by, and it's called setting intentions and releasing expectations. Mm. Start to live your life that way. If you help somebody, don't expect anything back. Mm. And watch the universe work. Mm. Watch God work. Whoever you believe in.
I love that.
Literally, set intentions and release expectations.
Yeah. I think it's a Tony Robbins quote. He says, trade your expectations for appreciation, and your life will change. So
that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have high expectations, or you expect a lot, like you're going to be disappointed, right? Or you're going to feel slighted or whatever. But if you're just given to give and not as a trade, not as an exchange, you're going to just be so much better off. So I agree with that 100%. But before we wrap things up, I got to ask you the question that I ask everyone who comes on this show. And that is, what does not most people mean to you? Or like, who is that for you?
You got to be the anomaly in your family. I think you have to be the one that's going to be, that's going to set the next generations the right path. So when you're six feet deep under, they're going to say it started with that one guy or that one girl.
Yeah. It's powerful. Yeah. I love that. So, man, this has been a lot of fun. I knew it would be. But before we hop off, I also got to ask you, you know, where can people find you? I know you and Carlos are, like we talked about, systems and scaling. I know you guys are helping a lot of businesses with that kind of stuff right now. So what do you have going on? What would you like to share? And where can people best reach you?
You can reach me on Facebook or IG, Sal Shakir, SalShakir. We have a bunch of services that can help people, or we help other businesses scale to the next level, to go from 6 to 7 figures, 7 to 8 figures, and so on and so.
Yeah. And All In Nation?
AllInNation.com.
Yeah. That's like all the kind of the events branch.
Correct. And yeah. So we have events, we have workshops and all the good stuff.
Awesome. Cool, man. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today. This was a great conversation. I know, like, when I go back and edit this, I'm going to be like, man, that was so good. Lots of takeaways, notes.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for your time and even thinking of me to be on the podcast.
Of course, man. Yeah. I look forward to connecting once I'm back in Arizona for a bit.
Likewise.
Yeah, man.
Love to
awesome.
Have you over and come to the office or come to the house.
Yeah, man, for sure. I haven't seen the office yet. I've heard great things, so I got to check that out for sure.
Thank you. But thank you, brother.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, man. God bless you.
You too. Guys, thank you for listening and tuning in once again. And just as a reminder, like I said in the beginning of the show, I got a ton of value out of this, so I know you did. Please, again, share it with a friend. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one. And always remember, don't be most people.